Welcome everyone to episode 1 of Buzz IT Talk, the podcast where we talk buzzwords and the latest trends within the tech industry, with the goal of helping businesses and decision makers go beyond the buzz. This is your host, David Weaver. And as you may know, last week we published our pilot episode, episode 0. Be sure to go back and listen to that one because I list some of our goals here at Buzz IT Talk. And as mentioned in that pilot, the podcast is going to be an interview format. And for episode 1, I sat down with Michael Skiba, otherwise known as Dr. Fraud in the fraud fighting community. Some of the buzzwords that we cover in this episode include cyber fraud, cybersecurity, and machine learning. So without further ado, here comes my interview with Michael Skiba. All right, everyone, I'm here with Michael Skiba. Michael is the program chair of the Criminal Justice Department at Colorado State University Global Campus, as well as the VP of Counter Fraud Strategies at Inform, and he is known in the fraud fighting community as Dr. Fraud, an industry that Michael's been serving in as a consultant, a speaker, a trainer, and international economic crime expert. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, David. Great to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you on the show. It's actually our first episode, so I'm excited to get started. Buzzwords. We're going to be talking buzzwords a little bit here. Some of the main ones are, we're going to be talking a little bit cyber fraud, cyber security. We're going to be getting into a little bit of machine learning. Just kind of going deeper on some of these topics that we're hearing a lot about. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? I gave you a brief introduction, but maybe a little bit more of your background. And what I really want to know more about is this Dr. Fraud trademark that you have. So maybe you can get into that a little bit.
Okay, sure. Thank you, David. And again, great to be here. So yeah, my background spans about 20 years, a mix of investigation. So I did 20 years with special investigative units for several companies focusing on white-collar crime. And then also academics, so 15 years of academics. And what I found was kind of where those two merged together is the exciting point. You know, doing the academic research and inserting that into counter fraud and investigations on an international level. So seeing that big picture of not only what's going on in New York, but in Asia and Latin America. And that's what's exciting. The Dr. Fraud trademark, actually, and thanks for asking, it was kind of a joke. After I got my doctorate, one of my very close academic colleagues was introducing me at a counter fraud conference. Mm-hmm. I was speaking on fraud. Okay. And he just right before I went up introduced me as Dr. Fraud, and he kind of made a little in like a music type of James Bond sounding thing. So this just caught, and about 2 weeks later, I was asked to speak as Dr. Fraud. The email was entitled, "Hey, Dr. Fraud, I saw you," and I then thought, this is kind of fun, and
yeah,
I decided
it is fun.
To trademark it. Yeah. So yes, Dr. Fraud came alive.
Nice. So yeah. Yeah. So do you have a James Bond jingle, or do we still need to work
on
one for
you? I wish if
you
want to, feel free. I'm open.
All right.
So yeah, absolutely.
Good. One of your more recent projects was a book that you released called The Psychology of Fraud. Why don't you talk a little bit about maybe how the fraud game is changing, some of the topics covered in the book?
Yeah, of course. So what I saw in my dual roles in investigations and academics was that, the academic world is filled with research and projects. And those are inserted in all different areas and industries, business and even areas of criminal justice. But what I found was my colleagues in white collar crime and counter fraud had very limited research to draw upon. And that's really the gap that my book looks to fill, is providing some background on the psychology of the fraudster and, what motivates them and what what drives them towards the financial services area. And in this era right now of digitalization and all these things we're going to talk about, it's so important to leverage technology, but also understand the criminal. You're going to create more fine-tuned strategies if you know the criminal And you, then you insert that into your counter fraud efforts and your technology and things like that. So yeah, it was very exciting. And, you know, like I said, looking to kind of bridge the gap and add more research to the industry.
Today's criminals are getting more creative, right? I mean, they're getting tech savvy. These fraudsters are getting tech savvy. And would you say that these fraudsters have more resources with all of this technology out there? Are they getting, is it easier for them? They're not even getting their hands dirty sometimes, right?
Yeah, this is exactly true. And this is really part of the problem, because what you're seeing is with all the you know, technology we're surrounded by, not only phones, but just every aspect of what we do, what happens is you lose that the human component. Okay, so what happens, and this is very true of many other criminal areas, is that when a studies show that when an individual cannot identify with a victim, they're more likely to act in a deviant manner. So these criminals, it's so removed now, technology. I mean, they just could go on their app and commit fraud in 30 seconds.
Right.
And who cares? They don't know who the victim is. They don't know it's an insurance company or you or I that's really paying the price in the end.
Yeah, even on a personal level, not just companies.
Exactly.
Individuals that are affected as well. But the focus is really the economic criminal. Can you expand on some of the psychology behind that a little bit more? And maybe identify the more at-risk industries. Who's at risk here?
Yeah, and this is where, you know, those absolutely in the financial services sector. And it really comes down to, you know, risk and reward. So the rewards are great. I mean, financial services, I mean, in the name, it's finance, there's money. So lots of it. Banking, insurance companies, they're built on transactions and money. And criminal element sees this, you know, it's seen as a ripe target. And that coupled with the fact that it's not very risky. The punishment is seen as lower, less than other areas. It's not sometimes seen as a priority list for prosecutors or judges or attorneys. So absolutely, you know, the criminals are getting smarter because technology is helping them precipitate this a lot easier. So they don't feel as bad about themselves because it's just technology. It's not a person that they're damaging.
Right. Okay. So when you mentioned the financial services sector, as being very vulnerable to these types of fraudulent activities, what are some of the trends that these companies should keep their eyes on in this upcoming year? When it comes to detecting this fraud or when it comes to staying safe, cybersecurity, the buzzword, right? So what are some of the trends that they should be keeping their eyes on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we're seeing is with the incredible amount of data that's putting in the world right now. I recently read a research report which predicted that the first 6 months of 2018 is going to have more data in circulation than our whole human history. I mean, if you can imagine this, I mean, it's incredible. It's hard to fathom. Not the next year, but the next 6 months. So companies need to absolutely 100% have technology on their priority list, or they will get left behind. I mean, it's as simple as that. And they need to really, you know, a way to fight technology, you need a human component, but you can't just hire 50 more investigators or staff members or analysts. You need to leverage technology to fight that. So you still need those really smart people that know that business, but give them the tools of technology and they will just execute that much more and help fight those savvy criminals and help harness that data. So in my opinion, number one is the data that's going to be in circulation. Companies need to learn to manage it, digitalize it, make, just use decision-making logic to really help them focus on what their pain points are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that that these financial services companies can keep their eyes out for in this coming year to help keep them safe?
Of course, yeah. I mean, another area too is what we call a silo approach. So what we have is we have different departments that are not communicating with one another. And what happens is when you have such a a big threat on the horizon, you need to create an ecosystem within that company. So, you know, where they're all working towards one goal, you know, where let's say underwriting or onboarding department just has, you know, their myopic focus in mind. I mean, mm-hmm. you need them to be communicating with the marketing folks, sales, investigations. Everyone needs to be on board with how they're going to manage data and how they're going to handle this digitalization and, all these things that are being thrown at them. So companies need to make sure that they're not siloed, that they're just communicating, bridging gaps with all this data. Because if it's housed in one closet and then data is housed in another and they're not talking, there's a lot of power that's being lost that they could leverage.
Right. Okay. So when we're talking about financial services sector, what are some specific examples? For example, I'm assuming you're talking about banks. Banks are a big target for fraudsters, right? On various levels. So what can banks do to better protect themselves from fraud?
You know, it goes back to, it's very important to make mention that banks, of all the financial institutions or financial companies in the financial sector, they're involved or they have a lot of transactions, right? A lot. There's thousands of people buying things through the internet and money's being transferred back and forth. So they really have to make sure that they are really keeping track of that, and watching those transactions and where they're coming from and, looking at the behavioral patterns of their customers. And that's really one of the key areas in banking is that everyone has a profile, right? I mean, you or I, you bought coffee today, then you went, you might go to a certain market. Well, that's your profile. Mm-hmm. Well, all of a sudden, something comes up on your credit card that you'll purchase gas in Spain or Portugal. Well, okay, that's possible. But if you use technology, that can easily be deciphered. I mean, manually, yes, you can figure that out. But by leveraging technology, you can, very quickly and efficiently filter out those cases. So for banks, it's about, knowing your customer, keeping track of profiles, and really making sure that you are not seen as a vulnerable target. The criminals, they know which banks, institutions have paltry systems, mm-hmm. and they absolutely cap, just like we have conferences on counter fraud, they have conferences on, not organized conferences, but they have meetings, let's say, on, banks or institutions that are weak. I remember I was involved in a case, this originated in the States, and it went right through investigation. And right in the in one of the meeting rooms in the medical facility, they actually had on the wall the name of companies and the name of the individuals that would handle certain things in the companies that were seen as weak, if you will, right. or strong, mm-hmm. or don't talk to this person, talk to that person. So criminals will know. They will know if you're not seen as a strong force, then they will definitely capitalize on that.
Right. So I, as a consumer, should be going to my bank and saying, "Hey, what are you doing to fight fraud? Are you tracking my profile? And are you keeping track of these types of activities that might not fit my profile? What's being used to keep track of these? You mentioned technology, but what exactly, mm-hmm. what's a specific example in that space?"
Yeah. And exactly like I mentioned, I mean, maintaining, looking for outliers and what you're doing is, okay, your behavior, it comes down to the human element, right? But your behavior can be digitalized, okay, by zip code and by the time of day and things like that. So that profile is you have a thumbprint, you have a digital thumbprint, and anytime anything happens outside of that fingerprint, an outlier, and that's what data can do. Data can or data analysis and technology tools can use that data and leverage it to find that outlier. That hey, you just charged gas in Spain. Well, that's not possible because you just bought a coffee, in Germany. Well, And this is what the data counter-fraud systems can do, is help develop that fingerprint, and then, you know, develop a help you focus on strategies to avoid that situation in the next instance.
Okay. I mentioned at the beginning we wanted to talk a little bit about machine learning. Is this
big buzzword? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
big buzzword. Machine learning. What role is that playing within the fraud fighting space?
Yeah. So I have to tell you, David, that is probably the hottest word, number one, right now. Right. We see it everywhere. Every conference we go to, every publication I've seen, even focused on fraud. I mean, they're asked. You know, the speakers are asked to speak on machine learning, and it's. You know, it's really just kind of inserted itself into into what we do.
It's true for a lot of industries. I mean, it's machine learning is everywhere. So
And you know, and this is why we think, well, why is it now in insurance? Is it something new? No, it's been around, right? Like you said, it's in different industries. But why it has just, you know, popped up in insurance is because of this data. Mm-hmm. You know, of like we mentioned in the beginning, you know, there's just data, information, there's so much out there. Machine learning can help with that.
Okay.
And at its core, that's what it does. So it's, you know, extremely advanced technology that companies can use to leverage and really help, you know, it's really a tool. It's an additional tool that they can use and help them focus on all those things we just talked about, you know, all those, the fraudster, the criminal, the certain MOs and patterns. And that's what it does basically, is it leverages the data that a company has, and it helps find patterns that they couldn't, let's say. And that's really the, you know, it's the efficiency gain. So what happens is, you know, a investigator, an analyst could definitely find patterns. Mm-hmm. But it could take them 2 years,
right?
You know, hundreds of thousands of data sets, but machine learning, 2 seconds, milliseconds, nanoseconds.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and then they can insert that back into their, you know, into their system. And I think, I mean, if I could just make a quick point about machine learning, I think, in my opinion, it's like a Lamborghini.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, if you put a new 16-year-old driver in that Lamborghini, they're going to use 5%. Of the capabilities, right? And that's machine learning. Machine learning is such, in my opinion, the most powerful tool that we've ever seen in insurance and insurance fraud. So I think what carriers need to keep in mind is they need to keep in mind that they need a driver that has capabilities,
right?
That knows mm-hmm. the Lamborghini, that knows it has more than four gears, that knows the braking and the tires. And because when you put that driver in that Lamborghini, they will undoubtedly you know, use that to its maximum potential. And I think that's what companies need to keep in mind, is that it's not a plug and play. It's not just you purchase it and plug it in. You need experts that know how to use it and leverage it. And really, you know, it's going to help companies set themselves apart in counter fraud, undoubtedly.
So we've talked a little bit about financial institutions in general. Talked about banks, we've talked about insurance companies. Are there differences when trying to detect fraud between those industries, or even at a personal level? What are the differences when you're detecting fraud in those spaces? Are there any?
Yeah, and I mean, this is something, you know, we put the criminals under the white collar crime bucket, if you will. And what happens is these criminals, you know, we know that they are more cognitive. So we'll start there at a very high level. Banking and insurance fraud and other financial sector criminals are more cognitive than criminals in other areas. Okay. So accordingly, they can make a rational decision between committing fraud and not. So in their mind, it could take a second, it could take a day. They're going to decide to make that decision. So that's how they're common. Okay, that's the similarities. And also, too, it's really about vulnerabilities. So mm-hmm. both industries are trending towards online formats, you know, right. for getting policies,
yeah.
insurance, right? For online, I mean, you right now, you and I could do a few transactions, you know, on cell phone. So in that sense, those opportunities, you know, you and I might not think, hey, let's commit a fraud right now, but on the phone. Let's say if an opportunity came up and accidentally deposited 5,000 instead of 50 into your account, you might hit accept. I mean, it's that easy. The opportunity's there. And these are the things that happen with the increased use of technology. Someone that might not commit a fraud, all of a sudden it's on the table. They think this is easy. I might not get caught. Yeah, and they hit accept, and they you know, then they become the fraudster. So, to your point, I think a lot of what we see, a lot of the criminals are similar, because it's it's a just a vulnerable, high reward, low risk industry.
Mm-hmm. In researching for this little podcast that we're doing here for our interview, I was, because I'm not a cyber security expert necessarily, I'm learning a lot right now through our conversation, but in some research I saw a statistic that was pretty alarming, that the global cost of cyber crime will increase to $2 trillion by 2019. That's next year. Mm-hmm. $2 trillion as a cost for cyber crime. Maybe just kind of wrapping up the podcast, what would be then your first steps for businesses in order to curb some of this, these costs that are going to be incurred, to nip it in the bud? What can companies do today, right, so that we don't get to the $2 trillion in cybercrime?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, firstly, to acknowledge that it's going to be a problem. You know, insurance companies and others in financial sector services are traditionally more conservative in their approach. They you know, develop strategies, have meetings, and this is great. It's a conservative industry, but they need to be more agile. They need to really firstly understand, one, it's a problem, mm-hmm. And two, what are they going to do? And in my opinion, use technology to fight technology, hands down. I mean, that's the only way. Yes, you always need that human component, the manual. You know, they know their business. They know it better than anyone. But I mean, machine learning and artificial intelligence, all these really cool things are being used in other areas. So why not us? So definitely focus on technology versus technology, hands down.
Yeah, without it, I guess the criminals will always be a step ahead, right?
That's very true. Yeah, correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'd like to wrap up this episode. I want to thank you for your time. If anybody has any questions or comments, feel free to send them in over the blog page, the episode page. Otherwise, reach out, buzzittalk@gmail.com. We'll be happy to answer any of your questions. But with that, thank you, Michael,
Thank you,
Dr. Fraud, for coming by, and we'll work on that jingle for you.
Great. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
This was fun. Thank you.